morning, good morning, good morning. Or good afternoon, or good evening, or good something.
A good day.
I think I need a little boom-ba-dee-da just to kind of get me back into the radio fishing vibe. We've been off for, you know, about a week or so just trying to get everything redone.
Right.
And August is the time you want to take a little bit of time, relax, slow.
Very much so.
It is hot. You know, it's warm out there. I mean, it really is. And we've been upgrading our studios, working in the house, getting everything done. It's been a good time just to kind of relax. But anyway, enough of the stuff. This is our area fishing report. And we can calm Frank down on his stupid guitar. In other words, shut up, Frank. Okay, there you go. He's gone. All right, good. Yes, I think the crowd, everybody likes that. Everybody glad Frank's quit playing? Yes, thank you. Okay, yes, okay. Yes, we're all done now. Back to the fishing reports. Okay, here we are. All right, hello, Robert.
Hello, Frank. How are you?
Peachy, peachy, peachy. So, it's tough in August to come up with fishing reports and get excited about everything. It's kind of that time of the year to take a nap in the afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, between the rains, the high humidity, the bugs.
What rains?
Yeah, well. Yeah.
If you're lucky. You got a storm over here putting 3 inches of rain in about 4 blocks. And if you're outside of that little area, there's nothing.
Yeah, I barely needed to mow my lawn last week. And this week, I probably won't mow it.
Yeah, and mine is growing 6 to 8 inches a week.
Yeah, that's terrifying. But at the same time, this is usually that time of year where the rivers have reached kind of maximum consistent flow. So even though
should
you
file
down, float, slow down on the rains a little bit, you still got enough water pouring out. It makes it a little tough.
Okay, I was going to say, what does the rain do, Robert?
It makes it a little tougher fishing. It's pushing all that fresh water down. It's finally pushed pretty much, you know, because you have that beginning period.
I just think it's the heat that it brings down with it, because that river water's hot.
Yeah.
It's dark brown, acts like a solar collector, and it's putting a lot of heat into the harbor.
Absolutely.
A little less oxygen, a little more fresh, slows everything way down.
Yeah, Carl said he had 96 degrees there over by Alligator Creek, water temperature on the flats.
Wow.
Yeah, on the Gulf's at 88, so it's a little tough.
Yeah. So what does that mean? If we're going up river to look for fish, I'm going to pretty much call the going up river looking for fish gar, tarpon. That's about all that's really hitting up on the river that I know of.
Yeah, that's pretty much about all I've been hearing about, too. More gar than anything else. You know, they thrive on this hot weather, and they just like logs swimming on the surface, you know, and splashing around a little bit. You know, on those super strong incoming tides, the water will back up a little bit. So you'll get your occasional ladyfish and other stuff that kind of gets active up there. But it's so hit or miss that you just kind of have to toss a coin and whether it's going to work for you or not.
I just went on fishandfranks.com and under weather and tides down to the Gulf temperatures. And boy, there's a break line between us and Tampa of a few degrees.
Really?
But it looks like it's about 80 degrees, you know, from, you know, about Venice down, or no, 80, like you say, 88 degrees or something like that. And then you, as you get up, yeah, that's what it is. I'm reading this backwards. It's mid 80s from us down, and north of us, it's going down about 2-3 degrees. You know,
wow.
It's just a few degrees difference between us and the panhandle. And not much at all.
Yeah, but sometimes I can make all the difference in the world with the fish.
Oh, yeah. But we had a big fish kill up there, though, too, didn't we? Big red tide event.
Yeah, big red tide event. That's a good way to put that, too. You know, it's...
So, what? I wonder what the state dumped up there.
Right.
Now, I'm not... You know, yes, I'm a paranoid, you know...
Conspiracy theory
type person, but I have noticed every time we have a major red tide, and I mean a major one, with
especially
tons of fish
in such
kill,
a isolated location.
Right, when it's like that, somebody's cleaning a phosphate mine. just about every time I've ever seen this happen, where we have a massive red tide, the state is allowing or doing it, trying to clean up a phosphate mine. They got nothing else to do it, so they go and dump it in the Gulf.
Right.
And that produces one heck of a red tide.
Absolutely. I
mean, and that's the only thing that makes any sense. So the last few red tides have corresponded exactly with them cleaning up a phosphate mine, dumping the, you know, waste material and sludge from there. Holy cow, the river was up to 7.5 feet, down to about 6.5, and now it's back up a little over 7 again on its way back down. But it's right about 7 foot, which for this time of year is not actually that...
No, that's not, pretty low, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it should be... If we had enough rain, we're really light on rain this year, it should be 12, 14 feet right
now.
Yeah,
so I was going to think 11 or 12, but...
Yeah, we're about 4 or 5 feet short of where we should be at, which, you know... Now, last year, we had a huge amount of rain, and even though the harbor was really fresh, we kept fish all year because right. we had so much cloud cover, so much rain.
Kept it cooler.
Yeah, the water was nice and cool. It never got above 85. And this year we're seeing 90, what was it, Carl said?
96.
96. So, yeah, that's making a big difference. That river's not flowing. There's no water. There's enough water to heat it up, but not enough water to keep it cool like it did last year.
Right. It hasn't been overcast at all, really. I mean, most of the storm's been so far inland, you know. And, I mean, well, you think about Fort Myers. I mean, South Fort Myers and Marco Island, just about every day for the last couple weeks had those big storms hanging out on them. So I'm willing to bet they're seeing down there what we saw up here last summer.
Yeah, the temperature's cool enough. Yeah. So much rain, it kept it cool.
Kept it oxygenated, kept it a little cooler.
Isn't that a tough word to say, oxygenated?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, it's like, where did that word come from?
And then when you say it, it sounds wrong.
Yeah, it just sounds bad. I don't know why. But anyway, we've got some decent fishing up here. If you're into shark and tarpon, Shaw Harbor is probably your best destination right now. Sharks, tarpon, sharks number one. I mean, you can go out and catch sharks here. Take your light spinning tackle to your big stand-up gear. Whatever you want to use, you're going to find a shark to fit it.
Right.
From 18 inches to 10, 12, 14 foot. I mean, there is sharks for everybody here in the harbor right now. If you really want to catch your monster shark, right now is the time to do it.
Absolutely. And especially inside. And there's so much easier to fight in shallower water than that big, deeper water offshore.
And it's just crazy. But, I mean, Kale's on steady shark trips. Carl's doing shark trips. I mean, I know a lot of these guys.
Right.
And I think most of the tarpon guides are going out after tarpon, but trying to throw the... If it's a good guide, they're trying to throw you onto some shark or something.
Absolutely.
To give you a great trip. Because tarpon, no matter how thick they are in the area, are still fickle.
Oh, yes.
That's
an understatement.
You know, you've got a 5-minute bite and a 5-hour wait, and a 5-minute bite and a 5-hour wait.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you're there when it happens, it's all good. I mean, it's just explosive, wonderful. The Silver King is exploding, and then it's the Silver King is a pain in my yes.
Exactly.
So you get
There's
from
no doubt about that.
One extreme all the way up to the other one. It's just absolutely nuts right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty impressive. I mean, the amount of sharks we have around right now is really, really pretty cool. And the variety, like you said, you know, you can catch them on your little light trout rod all the way up from there.
Yeah.
And it's a no-brainer, too. There's no...
A bag of chum.
It's not a massive undertaking, you know. It's some chum and a couple bait, you know, a couple fish, mullet, ladyfish, sardines. I mean, sardines are great.
Yeah, right now, it's simple, it's easy to do. But anyway, all right, let's do it place by place the way we're supposed to, okay?
Okay.
We started up river, we got gar and some tarpon, some catfish.
Yeah.
The river's pretty slow right now.
Yeah.
Coming around the Port Charlotte Canal system, a lot of snook.
A lot of snook right at the mouths of the canals. Depending on the day, I mean, the other night, three nights ago, there was a really strong outgoing tide behind the house. And the snook went off. I mean, they were popping everywhere. They were all little guys. But the next night when that tide was doing about the same thing, not a soul. I mean, it was a ghost town. It was really weird. And I looked at the pressure and everything else, and I didn't see anything that would have changed. So it's...
Don't know what the variable was, that yeah. one night spectacular and the next night not so good.
And there was the same little fry or whatever it was out there the same as it was the night before. It was kind of a little unusual. But, and they might be moving around following some of that stronger incoming tide and just following that bait fish from one spot to the other and not coming back in for a little bit and moving over to the next canal. Because I'm hearing scattered reports at each canal, whether it's the El Cam or the Sunrise or Spring Lake. All those canals, I'm getting good mixed reports of fish.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of tarpon up inside the canals, especially juveniles, that little 10 to 20 pounders. Spring Lake's loaded with them right now. There's a couple oddball 100 pounders that'll just freak you out. The snapper kind of gotten a little quiet, but the sand bream kind of took over a little bit. I'm hearing a few more guys catching some sand bream this past few days.
What a great eating fish.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, if you're out there looking for meat, get yourself a number six hook, just a little tiny number six hooks and some pieces of peeled shrimp meat, put it on there. And you can use it under a bobber or off the bottom, either way. But they're great fish. I mean, it's the saltwater crappie is what it is to me. I mean, it's obviously not a saltwater crappie, but that's as close as I would come up with an analogy to it.
I want to try to target them. I want to try to break the all tackle record.
Okay, we can do that.
It's pretty short.
This week is boat week for me. I've got the yard kind of done. You know, we're cleaned up enough where it's okay now. Chuck Hep, Chuck's Custom Carpentry. Boy, if you need anything, if you can get Chuck to get the time. What an amazing thing. When you see our new offices here, Chuck helped us out, and Greg helped out with the desk, and Chuck helped out with the shelves, and out the house he came out and stopped out and helped me out for a day with new railings and all kinds of other cool stuff, and helped me chop up some of the garbage I've had laying around there. Oh my God. But Chuck's Custom Carpentry, you know, he's on our website under Friends. Give him a call.
He's pretty amazing.
Really amazing. Does great work. But he's so booked, it's unbelievable. I mean, but...
You would be if you're good.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. He is that good.
And he's fair. I like him. He's just a genuinely phenomenal person.
Yeah. I know we shouldn't be doing that, but, I mean, I don't know where I'd be without, you know, right. the amazing stuff he's done, helped me out with. But anyway, enough of Chuck's Custom Carpentry. See, I threw one more plug in.
Nice.
There. Yeah. All right.
Subtle, too.
Yes, subtle. Anyway, going around to the Mica Cutoff, it's so warm, I can't imagine there's anything in there but some monster snook.
Yeah, there's been some big snook in there, but most of the guys are just kind of driving through, checking it out, and realizing that the visibility is about 6 inches and kind of moving on.
Yeah, it's tough just, with as murky as the water is back there. Yeah. Really tough.
You know, going up into the actual Myakka itself, the tarpon are kind of scattered from the mouth of the Myakka all the way up to El Jobin. A lot of small sharks.
Okay, we can do that. Next time, you take the major and I'll take the upper third when we do the harmonies. But a lot of small sharks. But up at El Jobin at night, you can do pretty good.
Yeah, and it's weird because I don't understand why the snapper would feed more at night there than they would during the day, because they aren't going to travel that far.
No, they're pretty much homebodies. They're going to hang around an area.
Yeah, and yet the guys fishing at night there have been catching some fairly nice ones. Not great abundance, but enough where you can actually target them and catch them.
The problem is, during the day, they're up underneath the car bridge, you know, where the road bridges are. They're not over by the trestle as much. And I think what it is, at night, you know, it cools off just a little bit. You don't have sun beating on the water, and they get closer to the fishing pier.
That makes sense.
Out there during the day and you're anchored up underneath one of the bridges or fishing underneath one of the bridges, I think you're going to find those big snappers. But I think it gets so bright and so hot during the day, I think they go underneath the car bridges because it's cooler.
Right. That would make sense.
And that's the only reason I can think of why at night they do so much better off the pier than during the day.
Yeah.
But, and anyway, going out towards Myakka, I guess we're going down the west wall. Trout Creek, it's got a little bit of redfish in it, but you really got to find some deep water, and it's got to have some moving tide.
Yeah, yeah. But the moving water is the main key right now, especially an incoming tide is much better than the outgoing tide over there.
I think if it was me, I'd blow off the first half, that northern half of the west wall, and I wouldn't even start until I got down south.
I agree
south
with
of
you
the
on
towers,
that one.
Maybe even like the first... just bit right before Muddy Bay there.
Right. First couple hundred yards before that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't even heard any fish in Muddy Bay.
No. No, I haven't heard. There's been some jacks popping in and out of there, but you know how they are. They're here and then gone 2 minutes later.
But outside the bar on the west side, it's a whole different story. You right. get in anywhere from 3 foot to whatever out from that bar. And you were telling me all about the shark and tarpon out there.
Yeah, the tarpon bite's been incredible. I had a gentleman in here the other day.
He you know, we drifting. Didn't mark that as a good spot on the tarpon map.
No, we didn't. We overlooked that.
Yeah, so my tarpon map is flawed.
So. Right.
All right.
The guy was out there the other day drifting down south looking for some trout and an oddball redfish up in that 3 feet of water, and he said there was fish popping everywhere. And he started jumping tarpon, like 20-pounders and 30-pounders. And they progressively got bigger. I think he said he ended up hooking like 9 fish and landed 2. And one was about 60 or 70 pounds.
That's one of the things I think people forget about tarpon fishing. Hookups, jumps, and landings is what we count. And we don't do like those idiots in Boca Grande.
Right.
If you touch the leader, who cares?
That's for any fish. I'm sorry.
I mean,
I don't care if it's a billfish.
It took a Boca Grande guide to come up with, well, if you touch the leader, you got the fish. Give me a break.
Right.
It's, you get them hooked up, how many jumps you get out of them, and how many fish you actually land.
Right. Exactly.
If you hooked a tarpon and lost him right away, you know, he comes up, gives a little head shake, you know he's on and off. But how many times did I get him to jump during a fight, and then how many fish I actually landed?
Absolutely. That's what I do, too. Until I have that fish's jaw in my hand and getting that hook out, he's not a caught fish.
And never allow your captain to break off the leader unless that shark is being unless the tarpon's being chased by the shark. Cruel and unusual punishment. Just breaks the jaw. I think a lot of the dead fish we see each year in Boca Grande, they don't have any visible marks on them, but I'll bet you if they did a necropsy on them, I bet you they'd find they had broken jaws from those idiots snapping off 100-pound test on their face.
Yeah.
You know, and I agree. Leaving the hooks in, that's blood poisoning and everything else, it's bad.
Right, exactly. I mean, only under a situation where, like you said, you know, they're being chased by a shark, I think that's the only exception to the rule.
Yeah.
Never
want to have a fish with a leash on him, you know, dangling monofilament, get caught and snagged on something. We want to take the hooks out and do it properly. Yeah. And it's better because nowadays everybody knows to release the fish. Take your time, especially in warm water. Not a lot of oxygen in that water.
Right.
So hold them next to the boat, let them lay still, and like Robert says, wait until they wiggle. If they're laying there and he's just stiff as a board laying across the boat, you let him go. He's not going to make it.
Right.
You've got to give him time to relax, and that means holding him still, not shaking him back and forth. Just hold him nice and still. Let him lay back and relax. It could take 15, 20, 30, 40 minutes, but...
Yeah, absolutely.
As soon as he's ready to go...
It will take absolutely that long.
Yeah, he'll just swim off. But, you know, as long as he's stiff, keep him next to you, keep a hand on him, no matter how hard he thrashes, because he's still upset. A human has right. his hand, has his head, you
exactly.
know.
Exactly.
So, but it's up to you to be smarter than the fish. So, anyway, coming down around Cape Hayes... A little slow down there, a couple pompano, what
couple
else?
A couple oddball pompano, a couple oddball small sharks, but mostly on the deep trough side going towards into Turtle Bay. You know, there's been a few tarpon, like I said, the sharks, the oddball pompano, been an oddball trout there, but the pinfish have really moved in real heavy there,
so if
mainly
you're,
on
if
that
you,
deeper side.
Yeah, if you're throwing a piece of bait out and all of a sudden you pull it back and you got a skeleton, you're going to have to move. There's no way. Once those pinfish find your bait and they start attacking it, picture piranhas. They're just going to sit there and keep picking on it and stripping it. And the only way you can avoid it is to move.
You've said it best. If they got like 3 feet long, nobody would ever get in the water.
If a pinfish got 2 foot long, I'd never get in the water.
Yeah.
I've seen them pick apart fish and other critters in the water. There's no way.
And each other.
Yeah, and each other. Anything that's, you know.
If it's wiggling, so, they'll eat it.
Yeah.
Or beat the crap out of it for territorial purposes.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
I've watched three pinfish run a snook out of a tank. So.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Gangland rules there. But getting along up into Turtle Bay, I'm not hearing much in the back. Mostly everything's out by the mouth, the entrances.
Most of it's right at the main entrances.
It's going to be cooler, more water flow.
A lot more water flow. The mullet are thick all along out front. And quite a bit on the inside, and they're all the smaller guys. They're those I don't know, like our little 2-pack and 3-pack mullet, they're all running like that 8 to 12 inches.
Mm-hmm.
They're just at that, you know, young adult size, I guess. They are everywhere out there. So some of the snook are chasing them. There's some redfish following the right inside the mullet because they're in loose little schools from 10 to 50 fish.
Right. Going over to Bull Bay?
Right there at the entrances, there's been some really nice snook. Underneath those shacks have been some pretty good snapper. Up inside, a little bit of redfish, but very few guys going up inside there because that water's real dark.
Well, once you come out of the back, you're kind of looking at the Tailing Flats, Gasparilla Sound area, devilfish, sandfly, all that down there, catfish, wooden creeks, and all them. What's going on over there?
The flats are doing more productive than they are up closer to the shoreline. There's been some nice redfish scattered out in some of that deeper water in that 2 to 4 foot of water.
Yeah, by the way, folks, when we talk deeper water, we're talking 3-4 feet. Shallower water is 2 feet or less.
Right.
And people come down, they say, oh, I was running pretty shallow, you know, because I was telling them, you know, the only time I really worry about flushing the inside of my motor out is if I'm running shallow. He said, well, I was in 4 feet of water. I said, bud, 4 feet of water ain't shallow. If you're running 2 foot, 18 inches, you need to flush your motor out because the sand and the salt combined is what's the problem.
Right.
Salt just going through your motor, when you wash it, when you're running it, it kind of flushes the salt out as you run it. But when you mix sand and salt inside an engine, it turns into clumps of hard, like limestone.
I mean, that calcifies sand, big time.
Exactly. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. But it's when you mix sand and salt, and we run the flat so much, that's when I put the hose to my motor and really try and flush it out. But if you're running mostly deep water, it kind of self-flushes. I worry about the outside more than the inside.
Right. Yeah, and the outside now, corrodes real easy.
Just so you know, I have, for folks out there, and they're wondering, you know, what I'm talking about, some of my motors are from 2003. So they're not new. I've got 2003, 2004, two 2003s, a 2004, a couple of 2010s, and 2012. And
you know, those 2003s and 2004s have got
thousands of
amazing amount of hours on them.
But and so when I'm talking about this, I'm not talking about it generically. I mean, it's just personal experience. But once you're running the flats a lot, you really need to put that water into the motor because that's where you get the sand and salt together. That's what causes the problem. Your zinc tabs are going to keep your motor from being eaten out by the salt. The electrolysis will happen on the zincs. But anyway, going on, and we're going down the Tailing Flats. I guess it puts us by Placida.
Placida's been doing pretty good. The daytime's been hit or miss. It's been some snapper, some sharks, a few oddball snook and redfish, and a few whiting even. But at night, it seems to really turn on. The bigger mangrove snapper are a lot more consistent. Obviously, the sharks move in. The snook really have been lighting up real well on both the Placida side and the South Pier side on the Boca Grande side. All along that whole pier, just at night, has been incredible. A few oddball tarpon that I'm hearing about, both at the Boca Grande bridges and off the trestles themselves. But the snapper at night been pretty good.
So anyway, going up and getting just north of running the intercoastal up towards Lemon Bay, scattering of redfish, but not a huge amount. Couple of trout, nothing big. I mean, really, until you get up to Stump Pass, I haven't heard much anything.
Yeah, in between there and Stump Pass, it's been just a little quiet, and I don't know if I think we've got kind of a combination of things going on this week. Is one, obviously, is the heat that's going to affect us for the next month and a half, and all the rain or fresh water flushing down, I should say. But the other aspect is that you've got people doing their last-minute vacations because kids start school in, what, a week and a half or something, 2 weeks?
Right.
So you've got the vacation last minute, and then the people that are just trying to get their kids organized, ready for school, because it's a pretty big expense to have children and putting them into school and getting them the fashionable new clothes. And not only that, but crap, they got to have specific calculators now. They got to have a special backpack to lift up their 420 pounds of books.
I don't understand how, okay, the kids work on laptops and computers, but they've got 80 pounds of books.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
No.
So, no. Anyway, but the whole school thing, yeah, it's all getting ridiculous.
But I think that's kind of what's affecting some of our weird, inconsistent little isolated areas that we're just not hearing about, because I think there are a few less fishermen for a combination of reasons.
Well, it's August. Everybody leaves Florida in August.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, nowadays it's not bad. When I look at the temperatures here compared to, you know, a week ago, we were 10 degrees cooler than almost anywhere up there.
Right.
Now they've had these chill fronts go through and it's nice up there again, but, you know, I've always maintained it's better to live here because, you know, every once in a while I just go up and I drive north and I see some snow and I turn around and come back and go, yep, that's snow.
Yeah, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, that's pretty. Okay, going home.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, going along the Gulf beaches, if you're going to walk along, you want a storm twitch bait or a bucktail. I think we talked about that on the fishing report.
Yeah.
And you want to walk out there in knee-to thigh-deep water, but no deeper.
Yeah, the snook have been hugging that shoreline, and they're scattered up and down. I mean, literally from Venice all the way down to Sanibel,
wherever, yeah. 10,000 islands, you know. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's been a phenomenal year. I mean, this is some of the most snook that I have ever seen. Yeah. Out along the beaches.
And Tallahassee, if you're listening, and we hope you are, and thank you for listening, but Tallahassee, we are, once again, we want a 40-inch slot on the snook. We want that nothing less than 40 inches. We don't want this little slot here on the West Coast, even on the East Coast, but on the West Coast here, we don't want to keep the little ones anymore. We want to keep the older, the weak ones, the ones that are, you know, not spawning as well. We want to take the big fish. We want a chance at trophy fish. We no longer interested in your slot limits.
Right.
We absolutely want to make our own.
Right. You know, there's also been a lot of little jacks of assorted sizes. Some whiting. The whiting have been really good right there at Stump Pass and at Captiva Pass. Wow.
Yeah, I know. It just goes. I was trying to remember the name of the island north of Gasparilla Pass, and I can't remember the name of the island.
Right. I haven't heard much about. I
know Little Gasparilla Island. What's the next? Palm Island.
Palm Island.
That's what it was. Jiminy, I couldn't remember. I finally had to put them in order.
Yeah.
But you're talking Captiva Pass and Little Gasparilla Pass. A lot of snappers there.
Yeah, a lot of snapper in them. There's been a few gags. There's been tarpon in and out of there, but real sporadic. As long as you're patient and waiting for them, they're coming through, but they're just not in serious abundant numbers. The snook are still in those passes, but it's mainly the mangroves. I mean, the mangroves have been sick.
Big snappers. I mean, and lots even of big snapper.
And that water is really dark running through Boca and Captiva, but those snapper are still in there in really, really good numbers.
Well, it's a great place to hang out, and for some reason, I know they did the spawn and all that, but they're still there.
Yeah, exactly.
I would have thought they would have moved on. There's got to be a good abundance of food coming back and forth for there.
Yeah, I mean, that's maybe about the reason.
Maybe it's the lionfish hatch.
Yeah, there you go. Wow.
Wow. Wow. Segue to disaster.
Yeah.
So,
especially
anyway.
After that other report. You know, that's terrifying.
What other report?
With the freshwater, with the lionfish.
Oh, yeah. We had always hoped that because the harbor gets so fresh half the year that we would keep the lionfish out of here, but they don't seem to mind fresh or salt water.
Yeah, they did a report on it and studying them and kept diluting the salt content down on the lionfish to the point where if you're into aquarium fish, angelfish require just that tiny, tiny bit of salt or higher alkaline water.
Like and a snook. Yeah.
And that's almost exactly what a lionfish can tolerate. I forget the exact parts per million, but it's...
It's next to none.
Yeah.
And I mean, so they can go from heavy salt to almost no salt.
You get about the same amount of salt in one of your sodas.
Yeah.
It's pretty...
Not good news.
No.
We were hopeful that we were somewhat protected, but that's not going to happen. The only way I think we're going to keep them out of here is that this area, we have enough people and enough fishermen in this area to get together spear gun club and literally snorkel both sides of the harbor and the reef every 6 months and kill everything we
see.
More
often than that.
Now, they said they tried 3 months and 6 months, and it was exactly the same.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we'll keep going on what happens to us in the lionfish.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever be able to eliminate it, but as long as we can keep it under control, that would be a very, very good thing. Out there in the Gulf itself, The nearshore reef still got a lot of mangrove snapper on it.
So. Oh, forget them. That ain't even the big story. I'm going to contradict this and call the lane snapper.
Yeah,
the lane snapper is incredible right now. Right. I mean, forget the mangroves. We can do those in the passes. Getting out on those reefs right now, you can get into so many beautiful lane snappers. It's a lighter, tastier meat. Mangrove snapper has a little bit of fish flavor, not, you know, what's slightly fishy.
Yeah.
But lane snapper is just fish with no fishy. I prefer lane snapper 10 to 1 over to the mangrove snapper.
Yeah, but then its counterpart that have been out there still pretty good are the porgies.
Porgies is excellent eating, too. I mean, I don't...
I think the lane's a little more mild, but...
Lane snapper's so mild, it requires no spices.
Right.
A little bit of butter, maybe, or just a hint of something. But if you put anything more than that on a lane snapper, you're never going to taste it.
Exactly.
You're just going to taste whatever the spice was.
Right. There's... You know, those are all within, like, 12 to 15 miles... doing really good on those. The gag grouper has still been very hit or miss. There's plenty of them out there, just been, you got to look for them. But the once you get out past that 15 mile mark, you got the bonita are all over the place with a few oddball kings in them. The red groupers start to get really good about 20 to 28 miles, even 30 miles. If you're willing to run out that 40,
now, gags are still open. Where's the best thing for gags?
Oh, you know what else too open today is amberjack. Amberjack opened today.
Okay.
So you're going to find those out there at that about, I mean, for decent size amberjacks, you're going to have to go out a lot, about 20 miles to get into them consistently. You will find them inside 12 miles, but most of the time those are either lesser amberjack or they're just juveniles and they're just undersized. Fun to catch, but
right.
not as far as legal size keeping goes. And, you know, and I think that's, it's funny because, I mean, it's a very underrated fish as far as food quality goes. Everyone talks about how phenomenal of a fight they are, and they are that. But the food value of them, honestly, I'll take an amberjack over a grouper in a skinny minute.
I'll take an amberjack over a king mackerel anytime.
Oh, yeah.
But
without,
I'm going to go 50-50 on the grouper. I'm still big into the grouper.
Right.
It's got just that little different flavor to it that makes grouper, it is a special one.
Oh, it is.
It is. I'm not going to, but we're talking a matter of taste here. It's like, do you like strawberry or do you like vanilla or do you like chocolate?
Right.
You know, I'm more vanilla. I don't eat a lot of chocolate ice cream, but I can eat the heck out of vanilla ice cream, you know.
Right.
It's just.
And I'm the same way.
But it's, that's the kind of flavor differences you're talking about. You know, the wife, she loves the chocolate stuff. I like the vanilla. But when it comes to grouper or amberjack, it's what flavor do you like best?
Right.
You know, no. I don't think there's a better quality meat in one or the other. I think it's just a different, slightly different flavors.
Yeah.
But there's bonita out there, enough Spanish mackerel. If you're trolling for different fish, try and make sure you got something like a 14 bomber, a small Maverick Goldeneye, something like that. Maybe even the Storm Twitch.
Absolutely. Spread it out. Have anything from little, you know, 3.5 inch all the way up to,
yeah,
like,
yeah, you got
to
have a Stretch 30 or a Rapala 30 deep, you know, or the Bomber. One of those lures that gets down like 30 feet big, makes a huge amount of racket. Stack them up, but at the top, make sure you get up one or two little tiny lures and
those
get some activity.
Those little
4-inch
cedar plugs have been working really well, too.
Who would have ever thought one of the best trolling lures ever invented is a chunk of lead with a piece of cedar wood and a big hook in it?
I have no idea, but it works so unbelievable.
I will take that over any of the painted ones any day. The natural, just a pulling a piece of wood, literally.
Yeah.
I mean, a round piece of wood. I mean...
And it's a no-brainer lure, too, because you don't have, no matter what speed you troll it at, it works.
It'll either go up and down. It's just,
you know, and the only thing you have to worry about is picking up grass. And that's all you have to do is watch the rod tip for picking up grass, because that's it. There's nothing to it. You don't have to adjust nothing, fine-tune nothing, nothing.
There's no lips. There's no nothing.
Simple.
It's literally a bullet-shaped lead with a piece of cedar wood in the shape of a cigar attached to the lead head. And a single hook sticking out of the back of it.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. I mean, who actually pulled that the first time? Who said, well, I'll just put a piece of wood on there. What the heck? It'll work.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Good God.
Everyone,
I love humans.
Laughed at him up until the point where he came back with the most fish.
Yeah, more fish, more fish, more fish. What are you using? Nothing.
A dowel.
I'm using a piece of wood. Yeah, right. So anyway, but a lot of activity in the Gulf. But yeah. If we come down around Ponarasa, what's happening down there?
Ponarasa, on the beach side, there's still your snook, but on the inside, there's been some really, really big snook at all those docks. There's been some redfish have kind of moved on those docks a little bit too. The tarpon are right along the intercoastal, pretty good numbers. A few oddball sharks of assorted sizes out there in that little bit deeper water, and some trout and an incidental Spanish mackerel, but nothing consistent to target them. Up underneath the bushes, too, there's been a good variety of redfish from all sorts of sizes, from undersized all the way up to way oversized, you know, in the minimum, you know, 30, 32-inch range. There's a couple schools of redfish down there, but you've got to work really hard to find them. And almost all those are oversized.
Okay. Anything up in the Caloosahatchee herd?
I have not heard of anything up in there, and I don't understand why.
Some nighttime tarpon, some big snook, but
they've got to be there.
I mean,
there's just, you know, anywhere from the 41 bridge, you know, old 41.
Cape Coral Bridge is one I like to fish. Yeah. Going from the Cape Coral Bridge, going up around the Colonial Bridges, and then getting over to Old Business 41, and then all the way up to the Railroad Trestle. Some great fishing up through there, but it's
sure
just real sporadic.
I'm sure the tarpon there at night, but just not hearing the consistent reports. It's just kind of odd.
Well, we're going to try and cure that. We do have two phone lines hooked up to our board now, and I'm learning to use them. We did get the equipment in. It is installed. The phone lines are here. We can accept calls, and we're going to be calling, getting a hold of captains while they're on the water, giving you more up-to-date fishing reports. That's going to be our goal, is to contact the captains while they're on the water and get it up on the radio fishing as soon as possible. But
that's going to be cool.
I'm still learning how to use the equipment, guys. I thought there'd be less of a learning curve, but I've tried it a couple times. I still have a little bit to go. But we do have the equipment. It is hooked up. It's just Frank learning how to use it, because I, as you can tell, I do the controlling of the, you know, all the stuff on the show here. So anyway, we are getting that together.
Name out front.
Yeah, well, it's also, I really kind of hoped there'd be other people running this equipment, and I'd be sitting on the other side just chatting.
How's that working out for you?
Yeah.
Not so well.
No, it's like, what? Another job? Okay.
Yeah, just so you need another iron in the fire.
Yeah, Radio Frank. Okay.
Anyway, of many hats.
Yeah, I keep pulling the hats back and forth. But as we go along here, coming up around Mat Lache, nighttime is the time at Mat Lache. There is some great fishing to be had there. Several different types of snook, or several different types of fish, but I'm going to call snook and tarpon as the two number ones there at night, and it's a great shot to get your tarpon at night.
Absolutely.
The bridges all around are doing great.
Yeah,
you know,
in general.
The Cape Coral Bridge, the Mat Lache, Ponarasa, the Tom Adams Bridge, the 41 bridges, all of them seem to have tarpon at night.
Yeah, and assorted sizes. I mean, literally from 10-pounders to 100-pounders. You know, majority of them are in like that 30 to 60 pound range, but I mean, a phenomenal number. I mean, really, really an incredible number.
My hands are shaking so bad I went to set down the coffee, and I'm throwing coffee on me. I guess I'm going to have to go to a doctor here pretty soon. Yeah, it's getting worse. Anyway,
up on the intercoastal side, though, of Pine Island, the tarpon are doing really, really good from Redfish Pass. Well, not real good, but decent. The main thing has been the snook that are up around all the docks on the intercoastal. There's been some really, really large snook, especially up around Yuseppa. Patricio's got a few redfish and a lot of snook on it, too. And then, obviously, there's always that incidental trout that you're going to catch while you're messing around with it, but not heavy, heavy numbers.
So, as we come up, we're looking at Jug Creek Shoal is bait central right now. A lot of white bait there.
A lot of white bait.
Anywhere around that north end of Pine Island, you got good schools of bait around there. They did come in late.
Kind
of
mixed, too. You got quite a few ballyhoo down there I've been hearing about. Some pinfish are starting to move in because it's that time of year where the little silver dollar pinfish are finally getting a little bit bigger.
Right.
And then Carl said the menhaden that he was getting in his net down there yesterday.
Gulf menhaden moved into the harbor. Thread fins are there. White bait, the actual greenbacks. There's just a whole
variety.
Abundance of bait in the harbor right now.
Right.
And part of it could be that red tide that's hitting up north.
Well, and you also got that other weird algae bloom going on down south, and you know, south of...
Oh, the Black Death hole down there. Is that coming back again?
Well, it's that weird algae crap that's down there in, like, southern Sanibel, Fort Myers Beach area. And it's not really a toxin, but I guess it's an irritant. It moves some of the fish around and bothers the people a little bit. I forget what they call it. They've been talking about it on the news for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, well,
it's not any major fish kills, just a few here and there.
But it's going to move the fish.
It moves them big time. They'll run from it.
Yeah, they're going to be irritated, and they're going to get out of it. They're going to push them out and push it up by us, because we're kind of in the middle between these two nasty events, the red tide to the north and the algae thing on the south of us. So I think that's where we're getting this bait push from.
Right. You know? And then if you're really paranoid, you can talk about that other bacteria that causes the massive infections if you got a cut on you and all that crap.
Yeah, but bleach is the key. If you're out in the salt water,
I'd be more worried about an airplane landing on me than any of that other stuff.
Yeah, too many crickets. An airplane on the beach and
of them in a week's time? I mean, are you kidding me?
It's crazy, and that poor guy and his kid died.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's just sad.
How horrific for the guy who did it, because he's obviously a good guy. I mean, he's made a living. He's, you know, not a derelict, and, you know, the plane stalls, and he goes on the beach and ends up, and, I mean, how is he going to live with that?
I don't know. I mean, I can't even fathom
that. How can he possibly live with that? I mean, the wife and the kids and all that of the guy who died, that's horrific, and it's inconsolable. But to actually have done it,
right.
I mean...
Absolutely.
I mean, the guy's got to be just, you know, like me or you or anybody else. I mean, how is he going to live with that?
I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know if
he's
going to
be on suicide watch.
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally. That's got to be catastrophic.
I can't fathom it.
Now, when the second plane went on the beach, nobody got hurt on that one?
The pilot died.
Well, okay.
You know, that was it.
If that had happened in both cases, God forbid.
Yeah.
But I think the guy... If it was me, I would have rather died than killed somebody else.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. In a heartbeat.
Without a doubt.
You know, I would be happy to sacrifice my life not to have done that.
In a heartbeat. I mean, no hesitation there.
Anyway, the going back on a happier note, you know, that was the little, oh my God, segue there. It's just weird, these random things.
Yeah,
and people say, well, you know, you smoke and you do this and you do that. I'm saying, hey, buddy, when it's your time...
Yeah.
There's nothing you're going to do about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, click, tick, talk, tick,
watch every
talk,
sunset.
Done.
That's your first and last. You never know when it's going to be.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'm just sorry to be reporting that on what should be a happy show, but, you know, it's a big thing. I mean,
but it's reality.
I've never had
a part of it out there.
I don't ever remember that happening before.
No. I can't
ever.
Either.
And I mean, out of all the planes, because we get planes falling out of the sky here like they're nothing.
Yeah, I mean, you hear about small planes on beaches or in the woods, on
the roads,
very
everywhere. I mean, they're just come down all the time. I've never actually heard of one actually killing somebody when it came down. It's like lightning strikes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
lightning hits all the time, and when it hits people, it catches you.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're on the east side, and we're going from Pirate Harbor area. Got a few reds around the bushes and stuff. You got enough water movement still there to keep some fish, some snook and small tarpon up inside. But coming up the east side, I know there's big schools of reds there, but you really got to look for them.
Yeah, the visibility is so poor up there right now that you've got to
look. Well, if you get the last half of that incoming, you're going to get some clearer water.
Yeah.
But if you're there on that first part of the incoming, last half of the outgoing, first part of the incoming, that water's dark, and you can't see.
You just got to look for pushes. I mean, this is where you really have to pay attention. You know, you really got to either... look for a school of mullet where you're seeing a concentrated area of fish jumping, you know, the little mullet popping or whatever. Or you actually look for the wakes of fish pushing and go over to that area. But even when the water is clear, it's still got a pretty good stain to it where, honestly, I'm horrible at it because, for obvious reasons.
Well, you're blind.
But yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. I can't hear and you can't see. We're Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder
here. Exactly.
I mean, let's face it, if the two of us gets out, you might hear something, I might see it.
Right, exactly.
But, you know,
it's just even for someone with good vision, you're going to have to really strain and watch and take the extra time and basically go slow. You can't go anywhere fast right now over there because of those fish.
Just letting you guys know that while Robert is blind, the blind guy is the one who 400 yards down the sandbar, and there's this little pothole clearing with grass all the way around it. He goes, oh, look at it. Two redfish just moved over there. I can't even see the pothole, much less the redfish going there. So we're always suspect about this blind bit with him.
Yeah. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I know. It's just
no, I know. It's just like anything else. You try to adapt to things, and I mean,
well, you've adapted to working with me, so the blindness has got to be a breeze. You know, you worked with me for 6 to 8 years. Being blind can't be that much of a problem if you can work with me.
I explained it to a woman the other day. She brought back a pair of polarized glasses because she couldn't see any of the fish. You know, and I told her, I said, look, I said, two things working against you. Number one, the water's dark. And she goes, well, my husband was seeing fish. I said, okay, have you ever hunted? She says, oh, I loved hunting. I'm very, very good at it. I said, were you able to drive down the road at 40 miles an hour and pick out a deer? Oh, yeah, I was really good at that. I said, that's what this takes. It takes practice. You've got to actually do this on a regular basis to figure out what you're looking for that's different in the water, to get used to seeing those different subtle movements of something that's horizontal rather than vertical, or two shadows creating something because it's not natural. You know, that's something that's suspended up off the bottom, so you got the fish creating its own little black spot and then the shadow right below it creating a black spot, and people get used to seeing that.
I try and tell them it's like learning to read another language.
It is. It takes time.
If you've never read German or, you know, whatever, any language, I mean, it was hard for me learning Spanish, learning German, because if you can't read the language, it's hard to speak. Once you can read it a little bit, you can kind of put words and phrases together and it kind of understand it better. And it's the same thing with finding fish in the water.
Absolutely.
You have to learn what each little symbol means.
Yeah.
And until you know what those symbols are, you know, okay, this shadow versus that shadow, this blotch versus that blotch, you're not seeing those fish.
Absolutely.
But
it takes
every
practice
time you
and
do
time.
It, it gets better.
Yep.
You got to keep at it. And you can't expect a pair of glasses to change
overnight.
And your brain compensates for stuff. More and more they show us that what you see is your brain's interpretation of what you're seeing, and you have to teach your brain how to interpret those messages correctly.
Right.
And it's really weird, but I mean, I've been watching a lot of shows on how the brain works and everything, just trying to understand why I'm so weird. But you know, it's really part of the truth. I mean, I'm trying to understand why I'm, you know, we're all a little nuts, but right. You know, I'd like to understand my inability to form reality better. So, and the brain trying to interpret these signals is really, there's so much information coming at you at any moment, your brain has to adjust. So, anyway, coming back up on the east side, you got to look for those schools of redfish. There's a few trout, but outside the bar, we're still seeing a lot of small sharks out there.
A lot of small sharks, tarpon.
Some tarpon on the east side, better on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
But and let's go out towards the reef. Alligator Creek Reef is surprisingly good for the heat and the fresh water. There's still some gag grouper out there.
Mangrove snapper.
Sharks going across.
Incidental cobia, but very few. A lot of sharks, a few tarpon on it. The only thing that I haven't heard, which is weird, is this. It's like the spade fish all of a sudden turned off. I mean, we had a couple few good weeks there where we were hearing about them all the time, and I have not heard of any spade fish at there or Cape Hayes in the past probably 10 days.
Oh, and we were there right by the mouth of Alligator Creek, and if you go from the mouth of Alligator Creek out to the reef, and it's about a third of the way from Alligator Creek to the reef, but if you're going to line up a line to figure out where I'm talking about, look at the mouth of Alligator Creek and look at the artificial reef, and go about a third of the way from Alligator Creek, and late mornings, early afternoons, you get a good concentration of tarpon there. And it's probably 2 days out of three. And it could be 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, it could be 4, 5, 6 in the afternoon, or evening, you know, still afternoon now because it's still light. But in those time changes, I'm not doing much, there's not much there between noon and five. But before noon, that late morning, early evening, that's a great place to find tarpon right now.
Right.
It's worth a look during the day if you're
Absolutely.
Going by.
Well,
just shut down,
it's
act like a hole in the water
too.
And watch.
And that gets better as the summer progresses. As mm-hmm. we start to get in through this whole month of August and September, that whole area from Alligator Creek over to Hoar Point just starts to really get...
From Alligator Creek to Mangrove Point, Whorehouse Point, over to the reef. That's kind of a weird little triangle space there that, you know, this in the next month or two gets some great fishing in it.
Absolutely. The ladyfish start to bunch up there, the tarpon bunch up there, and then that school of redfish that shows up there every year.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that this
year. They already started to show up.
This is my year of the boat, or my week of the boats. I really want to work on my boats this week. I've been trying and trying and trying, but I got to get a boat running.
There you go.
And if not, I'm just going to take one of the other ones.
There you go.
But out through the holes in the middle, we're talking tarpon and less catfish. The 20-foot hole, the middle hole, the Pirate Harbor hole.
Yeah.
Less catfish than there was.
They're still there. We just said less. Not gone, just
didn't
less.
Say gone, but less. You can actually fish without, you know, consistently, you know, banging the catfish.
Exactly. And the sharks are of assorted sizes, which is pretty incredible. You know, they're from the little 2-footers all the way up to 9, 10, 12 feet. Who knows? I mean, there's just an abundance of them, and it's been bull sharks and lemon sharks mostly.
And
you know, as far as the bigger ones go,
if you get up north, the 20-foot hole or the middle hole, you get a lot smaller sharks. You get down to the Pirate Harbor hole, you've got a really good shot at a 10-foot shark.
Yeah, absolutely.
And heading there over towards Cape Hayes, and you know, your Loogie's hole out there, Loogie's Lair. I did that to bummed. Robert, named that because it didn't have a name, and I never knew what to call it, so we called it Loogie's Lair. It's on Waterproof Charts. You can find it on their new maps of places. But that's an amazing area there because of that gravel bottom, and there's some monster shark there.
Yeah.
Big stuff.
I mean, my biggest lemon I ever caught was there. Yeah. You know, and it was in, like, late July. You know, it was a oddball time. Well, not an oddball time of year, but a late time of year for monster big sharks. But it's been incredible. I mean, the amount of sharks that are out there. And it's crazy because it's mostly thread fins that are out there.
What I don't see a lot of is juvenile lemons.
No, very few.
I don't know why we don't see more juvenile lemon sharks.
I don't know.
Out of all the sharks being caught here, they're pretty easily identified because of the dorsal and the...
Yeah, but even cruising the flats, you would think you would see them.
You know, where are the 2-foot lemon sharks?
I don't know.
The 3-foot lemon sharks. I mean, I see small bull sharks all the time. But all of a sudden, we've got 8-foot, 10-foot, 7-foot lemons, 6-foot lemons. But seeing a 2-3-foot lemon shark, I don't remember the last one.
In the Keys.
Maybe in the Keys.
I've seen plenty of them in the Keys, but I've never seen them up here.
Yeah.
I hear of more small nurse sharks on the flats than I do of small lemons.
Nurse sharks, I see small ones of, from, you know, 2-3 feet all the way up to the big ones, much less of the smaller ones.
Right, but you have seen them, and I can't remember ever seeing a baby lemon.
I've never, I've been going over in my head, and usually it takes 2-3 minutes or so for, you know, I got to get past the radiation, the smoke, and all the rest of the things, that, you know, in the 70s that I did to my brain. But, you know, I don't have a clear, I don't have any memory of a small lemon shark up here.
I have none.
We got to get, if anybody's got any pictures of small lemons, you know, let us know. Email me, frank@fishandfranks.com. I'd really like to see some pictures of small lemon sharks. I don't remember seeing one.
And I know they give birth here. I mean, they show, there's enough adults here in the springtime when they're gravid. You would think that there would be.
Isn't it just a weird random thought? Why don't we see small lemon sharks?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen them 5 foot.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's probably the smallest one I've seen. I know they're not born that big.
Nope.
Mom, ow!
Yeah, no kidding.
Anyway, going back up, some big stingrays scattered all through the harbor. Here are stories of stingrays up to 40 to 50 inch stingrays out there.
Yeah. A few leopard rays around, but not a lot.
The cow nose have thinned out, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and the water's gotten a little dark, so it gets hard to see them, too. You know, all they do is be a foot under the surface out there. There's some out there in the 20-foot holes and some over by the mouth of the Myakka, but they're...
That's one of the reasons I don't think bow fishing is ever really going to catch on down here.
No.
I mean, there's going to be a few people doing it, but I don't. Even though we have too many stingrays and all that, I just don't see people going out to pop stingrays for no reason.
Yeah, except for last Friday.
Yeah.
Well,
you wanted them for bait.
Yeah, I know.
But that's different.
But I took frozen bait with me for the fresh bait insurance, and I still couldn't accomplish it.
We're going to get Vinny in here and talk about that trip.
Right.
We're going to probably Monday while we'll get Monday
Nerf
afternoon
gun so I can shoot him.
Yeah, we're going to bring Vinny in on the show and you guys can talk about your day on the water.
Moving up kind of towards the Punta Gorda side from Ponce has been good. There's been some more mangrove snapper in there, but they're mostly small.
But it's right now Ponce is a good place to take a kid. If you want to take a kid, take a bag of frozen shrimp, number 4 hooks, number 6 hooks, don't use anything big, and peel the shell off the shrimp, put some peeled shrimp meat on a hook, drop it down by the bottom. If you're standing on the fishing pier, a foot out to 6 feet out, further than that.
Yeah,
you gotta stay right on that ledge to the drop off, and there's a lot of little mangrove snappers there.
Absolutely,
a lot of fun for the kids to play with. They get a big kick out of, you know, they don't care if it's not a monster fish. And always remember, when you got the kids there, catfish is a great fish. It's a fish they caught. Praise the fish, because as soon as you start going, oh, it's just a catfish, you ruin the kid's day.
Right, absolutely.
I mean, he's all excited about catching a fish, and you're the only one who can tell him that that's a bad fish. That's not a good fish. Oh, dang, you caught another catfish. You should just get excited about him. Exactly. Let him have the joy of catching a fish, because A, they're good eating fish. B, least bacteria of any fish in the harbor.
Yeah.
The epidermal layer on a fish is the slime, and nothing has more slime than a catfish.
No.
It is literally the most protected from bacteria of any fish in the harbor. So, you know, when you start looking at all the things they fight, they bite, you know, everything. It's great, great fish.
Absolutely. You know, and like you said, you know, you want it to be as positive as possible.
Maybe they'll learn to eat lionfish.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Wait until the child gets older and actually wants to go target specific species or learn about more specific species. At this point, it's just the rod is bent and they're excited.
Yeah. Always praise the catfish when you catch them when you're with kids. When you're by yourself, you can, you know, cuss them, do, you know, be disappointed all you want, but not with the kids.
Absolutely.
And because there are some catfish over there at Ponce, not as many as there should be.
No.
There should be loaded with catfish, and they're just not.
Yeah. It's like they played a little bit of a disappearing act this past week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're thinning out. Up inside the canals, there's mainly mostly just small tarpon and a whole lot of snook on the lights at night.
Got a few jacks and some black drum, a few goliath grouper back there.
Yeah, the jacks and the black drum seem to have thinned out in the back part a little bit and kind of moved more towards the entrances. I mean, there's always a few back in there. But not like it was a couple weeks ago. We're starting to hear more of them moving closer towards the entrances there. From Colony Point up to Gilcrest, the tarpon are everywhere. I mean, first light, unbelievable how many tarpon there are out there. I mean, you've been talking about it for a couple weeks, but it's on now. And I think it's a combination of fish that came out of the pass and into the harbor that moved up there. And those fish that Kale was tearing up pretty good, you know, 2 weeks ago up above I-75, I think they kind of met right there in that little middle spot, and it's been pretty good. So, you know, and they're catching them on a variety of stuff because there are thread fins scattered throughout the entire harbor all the way up to the 41 bridge. We're seeing schools of them as we're driving over it.
Nice seeing bait. I mean, I was really worried that it wasn't going to show up. I figured some would show up, but more showed up than what I thought.
A lot more showed up than what I thought. I mean, it's still not anywhere where it should be, but it's definitely a lot better than what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, but keep in mind, folks, if you're casting any white bait, thread fins, any type of wild-caught bait, take what you need, not what you want.
Right, exactly.
We've spent the last two decades, taking everything we could get and chumming and doing everything else, and we're paying for it now. We're going to pay for it even more later if we don't get this under control. So take what you need, not what you want.
Exactly.
And the bait will do much better. Well, the fishing will be better. Everything will be better. So anything we forgot here?
That's really about it that I can think of.
I mean, the tarpon fishing, it's still, if you're sitting there, you know, and you're inland Florida wondering what you want to do for the weekend, come down and go out shark fishing.
Absolutely.
You're going to have a ball catching sharks. You got a good shot at catching tarpon. I would say 60-70% chance on the tarpon, but I'm going to put the shark at 98% chance you're going to catch a shark.
Oh, yeah, that would be easily.
And I would say, you know, if you're going to hire one of the captains and you have a 98% chance of having a great shark trip right now, 60, 70% chance on the tarpon. Snook, redfish is really good right now. I don't know what to put the odds at, but
as long as you're willing to travel for them, you got to travel out closer to that intercoastal for those guys.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd come to Port Charlotte necessarily for the snook. I would think I would go out more towards Englewood or down by Sanibel or something like that. Go out towards Englewood. I don't really recommend going out to Gasparilla Island for anything.
No,
you know, just driving out there and fishing for the day is great, but I
on and off
stay
quickly.
There.
Yeah,
I would go out towards Englewood and walk the beaches there at Stump Pass or, you know, Englewood Beach. It's less money and there's no weirdos, those crazies yelling at you.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's see. Well, as soon as they back off, I will.
You know right, exactly. I mean?
They're boycotting us right now. Good deal.
Okay.
Yeah. Boy, I noticed
that. Wow, that's tough.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know what else to add to the fishing report.
That's about it. I think we covered it all.
Yeah. And, what's going on in freshwater? Shellcrackers, I heard, are doing pretty good. And that's a fish I haven't heard of in a long time.
No, I haven't heard of them in quite a while either.
Get a couple wigglers, go down to the canals. You can go on Gibraltar. You can go back up off of
Loveland.
Loveland, that's what I was looking for. Hillsboro Ave has got some nice, good fishing on it. We're getting enough sporadic rains back and forth here and there. Look for a little bit of falling water, and you got fish underneath the bottom side of it.
Yeah, any of the little spill dams or culvert pipes, you know, like you said, good moving water, and that's definitely better.
And bass fishing seems to be about topwater frogs and or getting down, you're either using a topwater frog right in the thick of the lily pads or the weeds. And now I'm going to suggest taking kind of a spray or some kind of spray scent with you, but don't buy it for the smell. Buy it so it's a kind of an oil spray, because you want to make your bait slippery to slide through the weeds.
Right.
And I'm not using it for scent because it's sitting right on the top of the water. The scent is immaterial. But when you're using those topwater frogs going across the weeds, give them a good dose of that scent just to lube them up. I mean, WD-40 works, but it washes off so fast in the water.
Very quickly.
So Baitmate, which we're out of, is a good spray for that because it's a very liquid type spray and it's got oil. And you can put it on every 4 or 5 casts. You're using WD-40, you pretty much got to put in almost every second cast. It washes off so fast. But some good... We got to order more Baitmate because this is the time of year when I usually sell a lot of Baitmate because the bass are hitting those topwater frogs in the weeds. And it's either that or getting down deep.
Yeah, working something real slow, just a worm or a lizard under a little bullet sinker or a split shot.
Yeah, I'd pick a worm, something, and work real close to the bottom with it. If you're using like the Senko, what do they call those?
Wacky worm.
Yeah, the wacky worm, let it fall.
Yeah.
Get it down there.
Let it sink all the way to the bottom. And
you're
going to
catch some beautiful
it.
Bass. I mean, we've got some great bass fishing here in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Charlie kind of really wiped us out on a lot of the basses from especially
Shell Creek area.
Yeah,
but that's
Punta Gorda, Charlotte Harbor, and, you know, all the way kind of midway to South Punta Gorda, the bass fishing was really bad. I mean, Charlie really did a number on it. But now, I mean, what's it been? It's 10 years, right?
10 years and
so
2 weeks.
10 years later, we've got some very nice bass coming back. I'm seeing a lot of 6-7 pounders, 5-6-7
nice
pounders and up.
It's real nice to see.
So the bass fishing right now, great bet. Go on fishandfranks.com. We've got a bunch of freshwater spots picked out there. I think if I was going to do one, believe it or not, I'd be up to 760 because you got to mix a small snook and bass right there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun to do. If you get a little John boat, a canoe, you can fish off the boat ramp, but trying to fish under the bridge, I call it rappel fishing, because when I tried to do it, I had to tie a line from the bridge pilings to me to keep from falling in the water.
Right.
Because it's
pretty
so steep. So tie a rope around you and do that. It's dangerous. I mean, you can get hurt doing it. Or if you can find anything to float on up there.
Right.
Wouldn't use an inner tube. A lot of gators up in there. But, you know, any type of small boat, and just fish right underneath that bridge. It's nice and shady, and there's a lot of fish. Use a number 9 Rapala white and chartreuse, twitching along the top, and you'll do good or get to rattle traps and go deep.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, I guess that's it for this week in radio fishing. We're going to let Bobby take us out of here. And thank you guys so much for listening. We really do appreciate your listening. And we've got some really cool stuff coming up this season with radio fishing. It's going to be very interesting. As soon as I learn how to run the equipment.
Yeah.
Up this morning before the sun, grab my gear to get some fishing done. Jump in my pickup.
You heard from Bobby?
A crank. I got a ton.
We're going to call and find out what's going on.
Yeah, I haven't
heard from him. Fishing Frank is the guy who knows where the redfish and the tarpon go. From your boat or from the bank, the man to see is fishing Frank. He's got the tackle and the know-how too.
And if you're a musician out there and you've got a nautical type song, send it to me, Frank at Fish and Franks, or stop by the store. I can take it from a thumb drive or whatever. We'll be happy to post your name and link to your website. We're looking for local musicians. I'm trying to write a song now, but not doing very well. Bobby did a great job.
Yeah, she did.
Anyway, we'll see you guys on the next Radio Fishing. Thanks for listening.